Ramping up your business? The time is near. You've given it heart. Now get it in gear. It's Passage to Profit with Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart.
I'm Richard Gearhart, founder of Gearhart Law, a full-service intellectual property law firm specializing in patents, trademarks, and copyrights.
And I'm Elizabeth Gearhart. I help Gearhart Law with their marketing, and I run a podcast and content creation studio and provide podcast consulting.
Welcome to Passage to Profit, the road to entrepreneurship, where we talk with celebrities and entrepreneurs about their stories and their business ventures.
Our next presenter is Melissa Franks, and we have Derek Johnson coming up. Melissa, you are an on-call chief operating officer, but you weren't always that. You built this business up. Can you tell us your story and how you did this?
I'm an accidental entrepreneur. That's how I coined myself. I began as an administrative assistant inside of one of the largest retailers in the world, and my curiosity grew my career. So I was never really satisfied with, this is just the way we do things. I wanted to know why. I was a bit like a small child that was going to ask that question over and over again. And that led me to learn that my 9 months in finance was a really bad decision. And then I went to technology and operations. And eventually I found myself in financial services, where I had the opportunity to sell multiple multi-billion dollar businesses. I got to learn all about M&A and how to take things apart and put them back together. And then my last 3 years inside of the corporate ecosystem, I was the chief operating officer of a startup. Mm-hmm. Was completely independent and was able to do a couple of things there. One, turn around a $500 million loss and grow the business from $50 million to $350 million. And when I left corporate, the only reason I did it was because things were running smoothly and I was bored. Mm. And so I
needed a challenge.
Throw a monkey wrench in just to liven things up.
100%. Right? I'm like, I can't do this for the next 20 years. It's been a fun ride, guys, but you're in good shape. So I went to a startup which failed after 9 months. I think we've all heard that story about a million times. And was left as a newly single mom with three teenage boys and no income and a severance package she thought she had been smart to negotiate that didn't actually materialize and had to figure out what to do. And so I phoned a friend that needed a fractional COO. She said yes. She was my first client. And here we are 2 years later with a thriving business that has hit the seven figures and has a team of 15.
Wow.
And we help small business owners get unstuck, break plateaus, turn their businesses around, and harness massive growth to realize their potential and dreams.
Well, first of all, what does a COO do as opposed to maybe a CFO or a CEO?
That's a great question because the answer is everything except for finance and law. Really, what I say is that a COO is a bit of a chameleon. COO's responsibility is to be strong where the CEO is weak. So what we do is we provide complementary skills, which allows the CEO to do exactly what they're best at, or in this case, because we're talking small business, the owner or the founder. We are not CPAs and we are not legal professionals. So while we know a good amount about business finance and a good amount of contract law and some other things, we quickly defer to those that are licensed and know how to do those things. And so what that looks like is for any given business, a COO can be sales and marketing, can be technology, can be operations, so the systems and the processes, HR, people management. And really what we do is we come in and say, owner, what would you like to do all of the time? If you could do that all day long and love your business and love the time that you're spending there, what would that be? And then we do all the rest.
Sounds great. I mean, sounds ideal, you know, to have that support. And what attracted you to the COO role?
I like to solve complex problems, and operations is really the spinal cord of a business. It's where all of the communication gets wired and sent, so every single part of the business is doing exactly what it's supposed to do, when it's supposed to be doing it, at the right time. And when operations is humming really well, it's just like your central nervous system, where you don't even realize that you're giving yourselves commands to move your feet forward as you're walking. You're just walking. So what I realized very, very quickly is that as sexy as marketing is, as innovative and fun as technology is, what actually steers the business, what actually determines if you're going to be $500 million in the hole or profitable $350 million and reducing your prices while you do it for your end clients is how well your business is running systemically over time. And that's what I wanted to do.
Yep. So do you find it hard to convince the business owner to make some of these changes? Like, you come in and you're seeing it from outside and you're like, okay, they definitely could do this differently. And the business owner's like, but I built a successful business.
It's really fascinating because often somebody comes to us in a full-blown panic attack. Mm-hmm. They're overwhelmed by what's happening in their business, and they believe that they know what the problem is. And so the very first thing that we do before I give them the hard truth about what we have to fix and what part of their baby is ugly is we spend a lot of time talking about why they started the business and what we're working towards. Mm-hmm. What does their life look like when they get there, whatever that is? Mm-hmm. Because nobody started a business to run a business. I do not know one single person that started a business because they're like, I want to be CEO and do all of the administration and manage all the people and look at all the reports. Nobody wants to. It's because you had a passion about doing something and you wanted to be able to do more of that. And so once we know where they want to live, where they want to go, that becomes the North Star. And then every decision and recommendation we make, is it going to get us closer to that or further away? So when we come in and we say, hey, the way that you're managing your sales process is leaving a lot of opportunity on the table. And I know you want to take every call and you want to touch every human. And that's just, you're not the best salesperson.
Oh. Dave, I see. Did you have a comment, Dave, or a question?
What she's saying is the absolute truth. Sometimes people think, there's an old Wayans skit on in Living Color where they talk about this Jamaican family that do everything. And it's like, I'm the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker. I'm the air traffic controller and the pilot at the same time. You cannot do that and be successful. She's 1,000% right. But everybody thinks their business is their baby. And I tell them simply, if I was a genie and I could turn your business into an actual baby and you've got three other kids and I say one of them has to die, who goes? Well, the business baby. That's the one that goes. Exactly. You would never kill your child, but you have to be willing to kill what's not working in your baby.
100%. And so it's just a matter of trade-offs. And so what I say often is that data does not do drama.
Right. Mm.
And so the first thing that we do is get into the business so that we can look at the data. And then that's how we start making decisions. And then it just becomes a matter of, look, your conversion rate, if we're talking sales, is 10%. Sally's is 70. Who should be selling more often? Sally.
I agree 100%. It used to be when I was in corporate, they tried to make everybody be good at everything. Mm-hmm. And coworkers, and we used to sit around and say, why don't they just let people focus on what they do best and just let them have that and do it? And I think that makes an organization stronger. And then you have to have people, too, that are like, well, he's good at sales, but that's because he's stupid. I mean, you can't have people to act like that, right? That they're superior because they're better at tech than at sales or something.
Leaning into your team member's strengths is critical. That's also how you build culture in your organization. Mm-hmm. When you have the right person doing the right role because they're the right fit and they have the right skill set, yes. Mm-hmm. Then everything works better. And so what that also means, and this is where entrepreneurs struggle, is that you're going to pick wrong some of the times. You're going to pick the wrong person. They're going to oversell themselves.
Yes.
You're going to get into a real life situation where you're going to have to make a bad call. The reality is that nobody comes to work to do a bad job.
Right.
No. So you're feeling bad. They're also feeling bad. They know it. You know it. Everybody knows it. And so does the rest of the team.
Yeah.
And so where corporate misses the mark, and I really honestly, after being in corporations forever, could just say, everybody go make sure you have some Gallup strength finders trainers inside your organization and make them take all those things, because that tool tells you what each person's strengths are. Mm-hmm. And if you put them into a role where you could exploit their strengths, you're going to have maximum productivity, efficiency, employee satisfaction, and retention is going to be through the roof.
Yep.
And that can be true in small business, and it can be true in large business. And instead of trying to change somebody, just leverage what they're best at. And if you can't use those skills, that's okay. Wish them well and introduce them to somebody that can.
So we're here with Melissa Franks, the COO extraordinaire, informing us at a very good level about the value of COO. Dave, do you have any comments?
The one thing that I found fascinating when we were talking off air is that you put fractional COOs in with businesses. What are the top three things you look for in a fractional COO, and how does that work for you?
So the first one, absolutely out of the gate, is emotional intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the small business space, your business is going to make or break your life, yes. literally. Mm-hmm. The success of your business means putting a food on the table or not. So that's number one. The second thing with my business is been there, done that, can taste it, test it, touch it, reference check it, COO credibility.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So every COO on our team has worked at a company significantly bigger than anybody that we're going to ever work with, and we know that their credentials are legitimate,
yep.
and they have the results to back it up. And then the third for us is culture fit inside of our business.
Mm.
So one of the things that we offer is a very specific set of core values, which means that all of the businesses that we work with align with those values as well. And so we have to make sure that the people that are coming in are aligned, because that's brand integrity, mm-hmm. and that ensures the quality of our delivery. And then if I can add one more bonus,
sure.
one, it's the willingness and the ability to do real work. Mm. What we don't do is place COOs that are going to be talking heads.
Right.
What we place is COOs that will advise and strategize and then actually make it happen in the business, even if it means they're rolling up their sleeves and doing the work.
Yeah.
And those are really the things that we look for.
Oh, that's a great list. So just to share a little bit, we've recently put together what we call a C-suite team.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a fractional CEO, a fractional COO, and a fractional CFO. Mm-hmm. So the CFO handles
and
the
finance. And a CMO.
And a CMO.
I was about to say, where's the CMO?
She's always been there.
I've always been there, though.
You've always been there. So but she's also on the team.
But I get to sit on the meetings with them.
And so we're trying now to kind of build the organization, put some more strength in the structure and the administration for the reasons you suggest, because we really can't grow unless we have a solid base and a solid administration. But one of the things that I find challenging is kind of letting go and letting these team members do. I haven't achieved the level of trust yet that I probably would like to achieve. Most of what I'm seeing, I agree with, but they're still kind of new to the organization. The CEO has been with us for a year. The other two are just recently within the last couple of months. And I get concerned that things aren't going to go right or they're going to miss critical pieces of information. And as Elizabeth can vouch, I've been stressing over this a little bit recently. So I don't
know.
Any advice?
Yeah,
I'd like to hear it from the other side. So.
Yeah. So Brené Brown has this really great story that she tells. And this is how she does leadership training. So she actually has a jar and a bowl of marbles. And the way that trust is built is by filling up that jar with marbles, one marble at a time. And what that looks like when you're talking about a COO is them saying they're going to take something off your plate and them actually doing it. And you can drop a marble in the jar. So for you, it might be, hey, that employee needs to be on a personal development plan, and I don't have the time to check in with them every 2 days to make sure they're getting things done. And the COO takes it, and then you watch that they're actually following up. They're working the plan. You're seeing improvement of the employee. Marble goes in the jar. The next one would be, we can't track our data. We don't have any understanding about the inquiries that are coming in for new clients. What do? COO says, I got it. I'm going to give you a report every week. You get that report week after week after week after week. It's another marble in the jar. So instead of having immediate trust, because it's a little bit crazy to trust a stranger immediately,
yeah.
especially with your business,
right.
it's taking baby steps and those small steps, and they can happen really, really fast. We guarantee results within the first 30 days for exactly this reason.
Wow.
We do 2 weeks of onboarding, and then we say, okay, here's what we can get done in this very first month. Can we align on it? And the reason that we do that is because we want to drop as many marbles in the jar as soon as we can. And that's by us delivering results. And so I think for you, you've had a lot of changes. So the key is to look for the marbles.
Yeah.
And if the marbles aren't moving into the jar, then it might be that you just have somebody that maybe isn't the best fit. And that's okay, because sometimes you got to date a few to find who you want to marry.
They're rolling very, very slowly towards the jar.
Well, that could be a problem in and of itself. I mean, but that's one of the challenges. It's one of the things that differentiates us so much is that speed in small business is the differentiator.
Mm-hmm.
And when you come out of a corporate environment, you can get very comfortable to checks and balances and lackadaisical movement. Corporate mm-hmm. moves really, really slow. And so mm-hmm. sometimes the people that have the credentials don't have the ability to move with speed. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we put these very specific targets and marks in place in our business. And we check for it. That's one of the quality things that we look for. Can you move with speed? Because you don't have time to waste.
No.
So Melissa, how much history should the COO find out? Because we really haven't told our people some of the history that affects kind of the way we feel about things now. Should they hear, like, from when it started, a story, or just do they want to start fresh now?
My strategy, and this is what I say to every new client, whether I'm working with them or one of my people is working with them, is that if in the first 2 weeks we are not making you incredibly uncomfortable because we've gotten into the closet, we're shoving all the stuff, we've crawled into your attic and found all of those things that you don't want people to know, we found the hidden Christmas presents, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, we're not doing our job. In order for a COO to be effective, we have to know everything. We have to know the skeletons. We have to know where the bodies are buried. We have to know where the clothes are that don't fit anymore, that you don't want anybody to know that you have. We need to know all of that stuff because otherwise we can't make informed decisions. We're actually helping steer your business blindfolded, and you always have the upper hand, and you will always do it better. Mm-hmm. Because you have information and context that we just don't have.
Listen, I'm with you 100%. Two things. I hate the trust thing. I absolutely do. Here's what I mean. When I was a kid, my father's house caught on fire. I had to trust strangers to put the fire out and get me out of the house, right? When my mother's Toyota Corolla got taken, I had to trust the cops to come and find the thief. We trust people blindly every single day. The thing that I tell my clients, and I'm with you on strategy, culture, everything like that. What I tell my clients is, I trust the paperwork. Don't trust me. Trust the paperwork. If I don't do what I say I'm going to do, mm-hmm. sue me. You know how many times I've been sued? Zero. You want to know why? I do what I say I'm going to do. And that's the thing. We've got to stop being so emotional about it. Passionate, yes. Mm-hmm. And strategically cautious, yes. But a lot of times, a lot of entrepreneurs, you included, love you as I do, are worried because, oh my Lord, I've been burned before. Now I'm on this dating app again and I just don't know what to do. No. That's why you have things in place. I hire fast and I fire faster. I am not emotional about it.
Well, that's an excellent point.
But you got to ask her the most important question. Do you know the most unique feature of her business? She primarily deals with women entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. Why that, and why is it such a niche?
Could it be because men think women don't know anything? My wife actually uses tech.
You know, that's a great question. I was a C-suite executive. I didn't have peers inside of my business, but I had developed a peer group of very accomplished C-suite female executives, many of which left corporate jobs during COVID. And they all started their own thing. And everybody, by the time they hit the 9-month mark, had failed. And I went to everyone individually. I'm like, what happened? You're incredibly gifted. You're like, these women were incredibly smart and highly accomplished. And their answer was every single time, wrong partnership, trusted the wrong person, went too far with the wrong idea and missed the mark, didn't have somebody to advise me along the way. And I'm like, this just got to stop. Mm-hmm. More women need to own portions of the entrepreneurial pie. Mm-hmm. I have a passion for seeing more small businesses not fall over the 5-year cliff and fail at that point. And so we're going to take very real, credentialed, professional people, and we're going to bring them to the small businesses so that they can play just like the big boys and girls in corporate do and win really big. And that's why my team, I was joking with them the other day. I said, we're like amassed a bunch of corporate dropouts. We have a new person joining us next week from PricewaterhouseCoopers. Mm. And she's coming to us after a very long storied management consulting career because she wants the ability to do real work that provides real value to real humans that can move the needle. And she came to us. We didn't go out looking for her. And that really means that we're doing something good in this space. And that's one of our missions here.
Excellent. That's great. Yeah.
This has been Melissa Franks, melissafranks.com. If you need a fractional COO, her approach sounds wonderful to me.
You probably need one.
If you think you need one, you need one. Go to her website, look at what she can do for you, and then contact her.
Passage to Profit is a nationally syndicated radio show appearing in 38 markets across the U.S.
In addition, Passage to Profit has also been recently selected by FeedSpot Podcasters Database as a top 10 entrepreneur interview podcast. Thank you to the P2P team, our producer Noah Fleischman, and our program coordinator Alicia Morrissey, our studio assistant Rissakat Busari, and our social media powerhouse Carolina Tabares. Look for our podcast tomorrow anywhere you get your podcasts. Our podcast is ranked in the top 3% globally. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, X, and on our YouTube channel. And remember, while the information on this program is believed to be correct, never take a legal step without checking with your legal professional first. Gearhart Law is here for your patent, trademark, and copyright needs. You can find us at gearhartlaw.com and contact us for a free consultation. Take care, everybody. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week. We'll be right back.
Thank you.